Howdy, folks. I'm Dr. Will Wong. I'm from San Antonio, Texas. And let's see, a little bit about me. I've been a naturopath since 1981. I was involved as an athletic trainer in sports medicine from 1976 on, professionally. Most of my career has been involved either in sports medicine or rehabbing folks with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, of which I am a patient. I came down with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia in 1990. It started off with a mild case of encephalitis. And it just so happened that just about the next 200 patients I got for the next bunch of years were CFIDS patients. And we played. We tried everything. We had a really nice practice. It was a combined discipline practice. We had MDs, we had DOs, we had NDs, we had DCs. We had massage therapists, we had exercise physiologists, we had everyone working together. And the things that I talk about are the things that finally bore fruit. My topic today is increasing longevity and decreasing chronic conditions. If I don't touch on a particular subject that you'd like me to speak on, well, please ask the questions during the Q&A session, which will be a couple of minutes after my lecture. First thing I have to touch on is, what are enzymes? Enzymes are biocatalysts. They are things that help other things to work. In the human body, we have some 3,000 known enzymes producing about some 7,000 enzymic reactions. Everyone is familiar with the use of enzymes in terms of digestion, but digestion is what enzymes do on the way out. It's almost the last thing they do. The most important of the enzymes we have are the proteolytic or the protein-eating enzymes. A few primary enzymes of the protein-eating enzymes become the 3,000 other enzymes in something called an enzymic cascade. So the most important enzymes to the human body are the protein-eating ones, and we'll cover why in a second. Now, the question is, what are systemic enzymes? Again, everyone knows what enzymes are in terms of digestion. Systemic enzymes are enzymes that have their action throughout the entire body. And then they'll act as digestive enzymes on the way out. Let me give you a brief history on the therapeutic use of enzymes. Enzyme preparations were first used by a Dr. John Beard. He was a Scottish physician who, back in 1912, discovered that pancreatic cancer patients were not making pancreatic juices. So he surmised that there was something in the pancreatic juices that prevented cancer from setting in. So he went about cutting sheep pancreases and trying to make extracts from it, and most of his patients got better. When others tried to duplicate Dr. Beard's studies, they couldn't get the same effect. They weren't using the same fresh pancreas, fresh killed pancreas, as he was using. They were letting it lie around. They were doing all sorts of other stuff, and so his work was considered to be quackery, was thrown out the window, and no one thought about it anymore until the 1920s, 1930s, when a young Austrian physician at NYU and Columbia called Dr. Max Wolf took up the study of enzymes. He was an endocrinologist, an OBGYN, and in studying hormones, that led him to enzymes. He was looking for the things that caused other things to happen in the body. Dr. Wolf picked up on Dr. Beard's work, began to isolate enzymes, made it so that he could maintain the life of the enzyme. Enzymes are living things. He could put these enzymes into suspended animation so that he could work with them and use them therapeutically. He continued that work until his death in 1973. Around 1959 or 1960, he had perfected his particular blend of enzymes. And a company in Germany, under the leadership of Dr. Karl Ronsberger, who was a famous immunologist and enzymologist, started making these enzymes and selling them publicly. Dr. Ronsberger can be credited with most of the early research validating both the absorption and therapeutic use of enzymes. Dr. Ronsberger can be complimented for bringing enzymes into both the therapeutic setting, hospital-wise, we'll get to that later, and into the athletic setting. Then we come to the end of the 20th century, and we have Dr. Vic Rothy. Dr. Rothy is a PhD enzymologist, PhD pharmacologist, and he has taken Dr. Ronsberger and Dr. Wolf's work to the next level. What are the actions of systemic enzymes? There are five primary actions to a systemic enzyme. Number one, they fight off inflammation. Inflammation is caused by little buggers called circulating immune complexes. It's a collective name for a group of things we call prostaglandins. I'll give you an example. You've got an injured shoulder. Your immune system is picking up a signal from the shoulder that says, I'm irritated. The immune system will then create a little protein called the circulating immune complex, a prostaglandin number something or other, which floats down just to that particular shoulder. It's tagged with a special protein just for that shoulder. As a matter of fact, the fellow who discovered this type of protein tagging won the Nobel Prize in biochemistry in 1999. And that little CIC crawls into that shoulder and causes inflammation. The classic definition of inflammation is redness, swelling, and pain. It's a signal to you to stop using me. I'm hurt. Give me some time to rest. The problem is inflammation is a self-perpetuating mechanism. The inflammation itself will send the signal to the immune system to create more CICs, and the chain just goes on and on and on, well past the time that you were originally hurt. Enzymes act by eating away at the circulating immune complexes. There are two kinds of circulating immune complexes in the body. Those that the body tags so that the enzymes consider them to be endogenous or belonging to the body, and those that the enzymes tag so that the body will consider them, endogenous, belonging to the body. I'll get this right. And those that the body tags as being exogenous or not belonging to the body. In other words, it looks like a piece of steak floating in your bloodstream. Enzymes are lock and key mechanisms. The keys only fit a certain kind of lock. They will go after what it considers to be an exogenous protein and leave alone what it considers to be an endogenous protein. There are circulating immune complexes that run your kidneys, maintain kidney function, maintain the lining in your intestines, clean out your liver. If you don't have those CICs floating around, you're in trouble. When an enzyme works as an anti-inflammatory, it will go in and eat away the CICs it sees to be exogenous. Let's contrast this with the function of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, aspirin, ibuprofen, naproxen, Relafen, Vioxx, Celebrex, the COX-1 and COX-2 inhibitors. They will shut down most all CIC production. The COX-2s weren't supposed to do this. Turns out they did it faster than the COX-1s. When you do this, when you shut down all CIC production, what suffers? You shut down renal function. You shut down your kidneys. Shut down enough of your kidneys, you're dead. You create liver toxicity. And you don't renew the lining in your intestines, so your own gastric juices will bore great big holes through them through which you will bleed out and hemorrhage. 100,000 Americans wind up in the hospital each year with the side effects of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. Another 20,000 will die. Every year, 20,000 on the average will die. The enzymes eat away at just the CICs it sees the body does not need, the exogenous ones, and will leave alone the endogenous ones. The next function of a systemic enzyme is they eat fibrosis. Fibrosis, scar tissue, part of the body's repair mechanism. When you sliced your finger when you were a kid, that wound healed with an invisible, pliable, super strong scar. Couldn't see it. What happened as you got older? What happened to that same cut on the finger? It became thicker, much less pliable, much more visible, and not anywhere near as strong. What happened? There are a few different mechanisms to the body's healing and repair workings. First thing the body does is it shoots fibrin through a wound to give the tissue something to grow through. Imagine you're building a skyscraper, you put up the skeleton work of the skyscraper. Next, you flesh the skyscraper out, don't you? The body always puts in a whole heck of a lot of fibrin. Then the other part of the repair mechanism comes in. The body knows exactly how much fibrin is ideal for that particular wound. The enzymes come in, eat away the fibrin that's extra, and then the third part of the repair mechanism comes in. The tissue grows through the fibrin. As we become deficient in enzymes, that second part of the mechanism isn't there as strongly as it was before. So you have the deposition of fibrin, you don't have the clearing away of the extra, and then you've got the tissue trying to go through it. So imagine, if you will, a skyscraper, and you put so much structural steel up, you can't put in the floors, you can't put in the walls, you can't put in the stairs, you can't put in the people, much less the chairs and the desks and everything else. It's about what happens when the body doesn't have enough enzymes to clear away fibrin. Postoperatively, what happens, especially with abdominal surgery? Lots and lots and lots of scar tissue gets built up, to the point where some folks develop strangulation of the bowels, and the surgeon has to go back in again and cut all that away, and that in and of itself will breed more scar tissue, and the cycle goes on and on and on. Enzymes are the body's way of eating away at fibrin, and I'll talk more about this a little later on. Enzymes are immune modulating. That's the third function of enzymes. If the immune system's down too low, it'll bring it up. It will improve the ability of the white blood cells to kill off nasty bugs. It will increase the number of natural killer cells that the immune system creates. And it will try to restore a homeostatic state. In this instance, the enzymes are adaptogenic. If the immune system is cranked up too high, as in the autoimmune conditions, then the enzymes will downshift the immune system and eat away the antibodies that the immune system is creating to attack its own tissue. Enzymes are blood cleansing. The blood is not only the river of life, it's the river of garbage. It not only brings nutrients and oxygen to our tissues, it washes away all the metabolic waste and the dead debris. If that blood going through the liver the first time through, on first pass, doesn't get cleaned off by the enzymes, because there's not enough enzymes in the liver to clean them off, and the blood tends to hang on to that gunk for a while, and it gets really thick, and it gets really sticky. Blood, in the average person living in the modern world, can get as thick as ketchup or yogurt. It doesn't flow very well, and doesn't get into all the crooks and nannies it's supposed to. The enzymes will go in, and first thing that they will do is they will eat away at the excess fibrin in the blood, and anyone over the age of 27 has excess fibrin in the blood, and I'll explain why in a bit. Then it will eat away at all the necrotic debris that your body's been trying to get rid of, but your liver hasn't been able to digest. All the necrotic debris, all the dead stuff goes from the liver, where the enzymes are supposed to clean it off, down the portal vein into the large bowel, and bang, it's out. The enzymes in the blood will do that work so that it can go right into the liver, right down the portal vein, right down into the bowel, and out, it's gone. The results of the blood cleansing can be so striking that if you look at it through dark field microscopy and take a sample pre-taking the enzymes, take the enzymes, wait a half an hour to an hour, take a blood sample after you've taken the enzymes, there will be no doubt in your mind that your blood is substantially different. Substantially freer, less garbage, better flowing, less platelet aggregation, the sticking together of the blood cells, much better to flow around your body and feed you with. The last thing that viruses do is that they help to kill viruses. Better put, they help to render viruses inert. And this is a little ditty that I got from the internet one time. I was cruising along studying viruses, and I came upon this bit of information that was misclassified by the Office of Naval Research. I should have saved it to file. I just bookmarked it. I thought it was always going to be there. I should have printed it and saved it to file. So when I went back, it wasn't there. But this is what this file said. This MD, with the rank of a commander, was talking about how they couldn't come up with antivirals, antiviral agents, as fast as the bad guys could come up with new viruses. So they had to look at fighting viruses in an entirely different way. A virus latches onto its host via its exterior protein coating. The exterior protein coating has its own little set of enzymes that eat away through your cell wall, latch onto your DNA, and replicates itself. I want you to envision this. A virus will kill you by filling you full of itself. So imagine that those little viruses in your cells, imagine that they're sand. And imagine that they're creating more sand. And like an hourglass, see your body being filled up with sand to the point where nothing else will work. Very simply, that's how a virus kills you. Anything, this commander said, that will take a chunk out, eat away, or somehow degrade that exterior protein coating of the virus will prevent the virus from attaining that isoprene bond, and bingo, you've rendered the virus inert. And his suggestion was the use of proteolytic enzymes, heavy-duty, very fibrinolytic proteolytic enzymes. The top antiviral agent in the world is called isoprenosine, made right here in Huntington Beach by a company called Roussel. You can't buy it in the States because of politics. Most of the HIV patients in the world are using isoprenosine, lots of it. It works by keeping that exterior protein coating from being able to latch onto the host DNA. It uses a very expensive mechanism to do that with. This is a very widely used, known way of preventing virus replication. If you put in a substantial amount of systemic enzymes, you will lower your viral load to the point where you'll hardly ever get sick. I have to tell you a story here. I'm 48. For the first 44 some odd years of my life, I got pneumonia at least once a year. I could set my yearly clock by it. Somewhere between December and February, I would get pneumonia. When I started on the systemic enzymes, I spent 3 years without ever getting not even the cold or the flu or the sniffles or nothing, much less getting bronchitis that led into the pneumonia. I finally got a bout last year because I did 2 cross-country moves in the span of 4 months, and that's enough to kill anybody. But while I was taking care of myself and doing all the right stuff, the enzymes kept the bugs away. The enzymes improved my immune function. The enzymes ate away at the nasty buggers that were trying to get to me. It reinforced in my mind the action of enzymes on viruses. Now, I talked about fibrinolytic enzymes, scar tissue or fibrin-eating enzymes. This is the most important point. And enzyme preparation, all the enzymes in your body, you take the pancreatin, you take whatever else, if you eat a lot of pineapple, you take the bromelain, they are activated, they are kicked into action by the strongest fibrinolytic enzyme that you've got. I was talking to Dr. Carl Ronsberger, who owned an enzyme company. I was talking to him in Munich. We were having lunch. And I said, okay, so what's the most important enzyme in your preparation? Is it the pancreatin? Is it the this? Is it the that? He goes, no. It's none of that. It's the chymotrypsin. Chymotrypsin? How can that be? You've only got 1 milligram of chymotrypsin per pill in this preparation. He goes, no, you don't understand. You can have as much of all of the other enzymes as you want. They will do virtually nothing until they have something, some synergist, to get them going, to kick them into action, and to direct their function. The strongest fibrinolytic enzyme in an enzyme preparation takes the lead to cause the other enzymes to work. So you can take just plain old pancreatin, 8X. You can find the strongest pancreatin you want. You can throw in the bromelain, you can throw in the papain, and unless you put in a substantial amount of a highly fibrinolytic enzyme on top of that, what you just took will go in one end, go out the other, and go to feed the fish. Throw in a highly fibrinolytic enzyme, and all of a sudden, all those other guys will work. Now, of all the fibrinolytic enzymes on the planet, serrapeptase is the strongest. Serrapeptase is made by silkworms. Think of what silk is. This butterfly uses the serrapeptase to dissolve its way out of the cocoon so it can be born. It just secretes this stuff, and the silk just kind of sloughs away. You can take a piece of silk, hang it from top two ends, shoot at it, and the bullet will not penetrate through the silk. It will raise the silk, it will graze it, but it won't penetrate it. That's how strong silk is. Silk is stronger than any mammalian connective tissue, any mammalian scar tissue. So anything that will work on dissolving away silk will be a super strong fibrinolytic agent. Those of us who took physiology may have been told, some teachers said this, some teachers didn't. My physiology prof, Dr. Michael Michelli, made it very, very, very plain. He said, old age begins at 27. And those of us in class went, oh, because we were getting pretty close to being 27. Why? Dr. Max Wolf discovered the why. Between 27 and 35, our enzyme levels drop. They don't only drop, they plummet. You make a finite amount of enzymes in a lifetime. You use most of these up by the time you're 27. If you maintain that level of output, your body knows that you'd be dead before you're 40. Because three days after you made your last systemic enzyme, you're stone cold dead. You've got nothing to get your chemical reactions going. You've got the life force of sap running down the tree in December or of a rock. From 27 on, we begin to build fibrosis in our internal organs. We all learn in anatomy that this is eventually what kills us. Because as that fibrosis builds in the internal organ, the organ diminishes in size. As it diminishes in size, it diminishes in function. Any of you who've ever done anatomy with cadavers know that if you've got a young cadaver on one side, organs are fully formed, really nice looking, soft. If you've got the cadaver of a very aged senior on the other, the organs look like raisins. They're dried out. They're substantially smaller, usually by two-thirds. Try to cut through them, and you can, it's like cutting through an Italian bread you've left on the kitchen counter for a week. Instead of nice and as with the younger organs. With the diminution in size comes a lessening of function. Eventually, that's what kills us. Now, this doesn't just happen to the internal viscera, it happens to the brain. It happens to the blood vessels, the scarring over. It forms the matrix on which arteriosclerotic plaque is laid down. So you don't just get the calcium and fat and heavy metal buildup. First you get this spider web of scar tissue grow across the intima, the internal portion of the blood vessel, because of some sort of an insult or a strain, overwork, or the blood vessel is just weak. It builds that connective tissue there to shore itself up. And then on that connective tissue accrue the fats, the calcium, and the heavy metals that we know form arteriosclerotic plaque. In a very interesting disease called fibromyalgia, we have a really strange phenomenon happening. The cause of pain in fibromyalgia patients is this fibrosis. Why is it that fibromyalgia patients can be given all the pain meds on the planet and it doesn't alleviate their pain? Why is it that fibromyalgia patients can be given all the psychotropics on the planet? You can Prozac a fibromyalgia patient until they don't know where they are or who they are, and it won't change their pain one whit. And for this, we have to touch just a second on cardiology. When a patient has a heart attack, the doc knows that heart's going to hurt for 3 solid days. And yet the doc knows he's not going to give him any pain meds because they won't work. Why? The pain is the pain of something called ischemia. You've all done it to yourself. You've all experienced ischemia. When you were kids and you put rubber bands around your wrist and you saw how, wow, it's purple, that's really neat. And then after it turned purple, it began to throb. And the more you tried to move it, the more the sucker throbbed. And the more it hurt. You could have mainlined heroin right then and there, and that hand was still going to hurt. What took away the pain? When you took away the strings of the rubber band and you restored the circulation, the oxygen supply to the tissue caused it to stop hurting. In fibromyalgia, we have a complex mechanism, a multidimensional mechanism, where stress and estrogen dominance and fibrosis production from the estrogen dominance produces a lot of this scar tissue in muscle tissue. And it's just like putting the rubber bands around your wrist. All of a sudden, you've got these knots of fibrosis, fibromyalgia. Everyone thinks about the symptoms of fibromyalgia, but no one gets to the root cause, the fibro in fibromyalgia. You have all this interlacing of the fibrin in the muscle tissue, cutting off full circulation, plugging up the little microcirculation that feeds that. All of a sudden, you've got pain. And the pain meds won't deal with it. The psychotropics aren't going to deal with it. The pain's not going to go away until you put in the enzymes to eat away at the fibrosis. There are very few, hardly any, fibromyalgia patients below the age of 27. There are very few, if any. And those patients who are younger than 27 who do have fibromyalgia, you can show that they have enzyme deficiencies. What causes this laying down of fibrosis? I mentioned stress. We all have it. I mentioned estrogen dominance real fast. Guys have it. Gals have it. We get estrogen from petrochemical fumes. We get it from synthetic fertilizers. We get it from the pesticides that get sprayed on food. We get it from soy. Any isoflavone is an esterase. These substances increase the amount of fibrin production. Since the stress has already challenged the immune system, and your body's running low anyway, then the body will just lay down fibrin and lay down fibrin and lay down fibrin. The enzymes will eat away the fibrosis from the fibromyalgia. The enzymes will eat away at the fibrosis from postoperative scar tissue. The enzymes will eat away at the fibrosis that is creating the matrix for arteriosclerotic plaque in the arteries. Dr. Hans Niebuhr, famous German-Swiss scientist, German-Swiss physician, for 30 years used serrapeptase to open up the blood vessels. He called it the poor man's chelation. Serrapeptase three times a day, and in 2 years, actually took less, the patient would have a completely open vascular system. The enzymes will eat away at the fibrosis, clogging up and shrinking the internal organs. There's a story I have to tell you here. Dr. Carl Ronsberger, a man I spoke of before, was diagnosed with severe glomerulosclerosis, scarring of the kidney, of the internal filtering portion of the kidney, in 1970. They told him he would be dead by 1973. Knowing the fibrinolytic activity of the enzymes he was making then, he would walk through the plant and grab a handful of his own enzymes several times a day and swallow that handful down with some water. He just died last year. 28 years after his death sentence was pronounced. Why? The enzymes ate away at the fibrosis that were clogging up his kidneys. Enzymes combined with other anti-aging therapies that are now emerging can free up the internal organs so that they can regrow back to their original size. Many of the patients who are undergoing HGH therapy, for example, have internal organs that are youthful size even though they're in their 60s and 70s. This has been shown. This is a given. It's proven. It's been done since the early 1990s, we know it happens. Now, let's get into inflammation. I talked about the mechanism of inflammation before. 95% of all pain comes from inflammation. If we throw in the enzymes and get an enzyme level like the one that we had when we were 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, how much pain did you have back then? Hardly any. You were superhuman. At 18 years of age, you were invincible. You couldn't get hurt. You could jump out of airplanes, leap tall buildings in a single bound, and outrun trains, and you'd be fine. Dare to do that now? If the lack of enzymes is producing the inflammation or allowing our body to become inflamed from all the stuff we do, and any type of muscular movement will produce inflammation, then if we put the enzymes back in, we will have substantially lowered that level of inflammation. Environmental stress, environmental toxins, overwork, overexercise, all produce inflammation. Exercise in any form, movement in any form, produces inflammation. This leads into the lecture later on this afternoon about sports and enzymes. But just to give you a for instance, for every day of moderately hard exercise, you have 2 to 3 days of immune suppression tagged on after it. You have inflamed muscle tissue and inflamed joint tissue from the exercise you did, even if you didn't hurt yourself. Just from the doing, you had inflammation. When you have this little micro injuries, they eventually gang up together to become macro injuries, and then you have little owies that have turned into big owies. You have little causes of inflammation that have now turned into big causes of inflammation, and then, as I said, inflammation is a self-perpetuating mechanism. The whole thing tends to stay, and you're stuck with it. I always get asked, what about vitamins and minerals? Every vitamin, every mineral, is a coenzyme. A coenzyme is something that helps an enzyme to work. Let's take a look at folks that were considered the gods of natural health. Let's take a look at Dr. Paul Kellogg, Dr. Paolo Airola, Dr. Carlton Fredericks, Dr. Bernard Jensen, and let's contrast them with Dr. Paul Bragg. Dr. Jensen died of prostate cancer. Dr. Fredericks died of lung cancer. Dr. Airola had a massive stroke. Paul Kellogg had an MI, a heart attack. Paul Bragg died surfing. He was 96 years old. He had all of his own hair. He had all of his own teeth. He had the body of a beach boy, and women still chased him around. He ate a mainly raw food diet, which back when he did it meant something. He got all the enzymes in the world, plus he took in his own nutrients, and if you're familiar with Dr. Bragg's work, the apple cider and whatever else. But the man exemplified what a natural health person is supposed to be, because he combined not only the vitamins and minerals, he threw in the exercise, and he put in the most important part, the enzymes. Without the enzymes, the vitamins and minerals do not work. Why is it that some folks get such great results from vitamin mineral therapy and other folks don't get diddly? They don't have the enzymes in there for the vitamins and minerals to work on. Why do you take magnesium and zinc? Because magnesium activates 2,600 enzymes. Zinc activates about 600 of them. When you take them in, they form things like testosterone. They do things like relax muscle spasm. But you need the enzymes in there for the other stuff to work. The reason why Dr. Bragg's mechanism of taking in enzymes won't work anywhere near as well now is because of the way agribusiness has treated our food. Most of the fruits and vegetables we get have been hanging around in cold storage in argon gas for the better part of maybe a month, maybe more. If you are eating fruits and vegetables that are out of season here in the States, that means they came from somewhere south of the equator. Lord knows when they were picked or how long they've been hanging around. And just to give you a for instance, if I picked an orange right now, that orange would have 100% of the enzymes for all of 30 minutes. I put that orange on the counter. 30 minutes later, that orange has 50% of the enzyme load. What happens after a month in storage? Are there any enzymes left in there? So unless you've got all beautiful kiwi trees and papaya trees and your own pineapple trees and you know, all this fresh stuff you can juice right then and there and make your enzymes, you ain't getting much. Which means you have to supplement. When we don't get the minerals from the ground, it's not in the food, we have to supplement. When we don't get the vitamins from what we eat, we have to supplement. When we don't get the enzymes from the fruits and vegetables and other sources of enzymes, we have to supplement. That's just the way the world is now. In December of 2000, my wife, after 25 hours worth of the hardest labor I had ever seen, had to have an emergency C-section. Her ligaments in the symphysis pubes wouldn't stretch. She had fractured them years ago. They cemented shut, and she just didn't expand. There's an almost 10-pound baby in there, and he couldn't get out. So they did an emergency C-section, and I put her on a systemic enzyme, one of the old systemic enzymes, 30 tablets a day for a year. I was going to keep scar tissue from happening. We weren't going to let scar tissue build up in there because I've heard horror stories about gals who've had C-sections having to go back every couple of years and getting the scar tissue cut away. Okay, almost a year later, she's got scar tissue that's so extensive she can't lean back. She's restricted in her range of motion in her torso. It's so extensive you can palpate it from the outside, and it feels like this dense spider web going from the bottom of her rib cage to the top of her pelvic bone. Not only is it doing that, it is invading her abdominal cavity and it's strangling off her intestines. She's going to need surgery to get rid of that stuff. And I was horrified because, hey, this stuff is the best systemic enzyme in Europe. It's supposed to work. I was introduced to the Vitalzyme. I started her on it 5-3 times a day. In 6 to 8 weeks, there wasn't a lick of scar tissue to be felt. That little bubble she had of that scar tissue was gone. You couldn't palpate it. Her bowels were free, and she had full range of motion of the torso. 6 to 8 weeks, it's not supposed to happen. Any scar tissue over 6 months, you're not supposed to be able to get rid of, ever. It happened. We've got plastic surgeons now who are using the Vitalzyme on old keloids and using the Vitalzyme just post-op to prevent the scarring that sometimes happens with plastic surgery operations. That is how strong the Vitalzyme works at eating away at fibrin. If it will eat away at the scar tissue from postoperative fibrin, glomerulosclerosis is a cinch. If it will eat away at keloids from plastic surgery operations, glomerulosclerosis is a cinch. If it will eat away at the fibrosis in the lungs, allowing fuller breaths. Oh, here's another story. From an MD, Dr. Ward in Winston-Salem, has a patient who fell into a ditch of uranium isotope 131 in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, when he was a kid. The kid who fell in there with him died 2 days later. The fellow who rescued them from the pit died within 5 years. He's 63 years old now. He's the oldest living person being exposed to that much radiation. No one has ever survived being exposed to that much radiation. He is head to toe scar tissue. Not only is the scar tissue in his muscles, it is in all of his internal organs. So much so, his pulmonary function was so bad, he could only go up 2 steps before he had to rest for about 10 minutes, before he could go up the other 2 steps, and then he was so winded and out of breath, he could, and so on and so forth. Dr. Ward put him on the Vitalzyme just to take care of the inflammation and the pain this patient was having, not actually thinking about the fibrinolytic action of the enzymes. 7 days later. Patient comes back in and says, I want you to do a pulmonary function test. I just did spirometry on you 7 days ago. Why do you want another test? No, I want you to do the test. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. 3 days after I started taking whatever this stuff was that you gave me, I went up and down the steps twice and I didn't have to stop. I walked a mile with my wife. She always has to walk it alone. I could never go with her. Walked a mile with my wife. Not only that, I came home and I did 15 minutes on the treadmill. I actually came in for a prescription for Viagra. This fellow wanted to start his life over again. He was getting rid of so much scar tissue, the doc said his urine looked almost like jello. Because there's so much stuff coming out, he actually had to back them off on the enzyme so as not to overload them. Not to overload the kidneys and getting rid of all the scar tissue. He was just dissolving away. The pulmonary function test, by the way, 50% improvement in pulmonary function in 7 days. He was taking the minimum dose. Not everyone will have the same results. Your results may vary. But the idea here is the stuff works. Once you find what I call your activation dose, and this was a question that was posed here before, you find your activation dose by trying the minimum dose for 3 days. That doesn't work. Add one more per dose. Do that for 3 days. Just keep on playing with it until you find your activation dose. After you're there for a while and you're feeling better, you can try bringing it down again. But increase the enzymes. They won't hurt you. There is no LD50. There's no toxic level of enzymes. Keep on playing with it. Question?
Yes,
Mike?
I was just wondering about infants and children. You have a child. Does your child consume this product, and how much, and how does that work? Or
well, you know,
does he need it? Or
my little guy gets really, really, really grumpy when he's teething. All little guys get grumpy when he's teething. But this little blonde-haired Wong, the only blonde-haired Wong I know of, has his mother's temper. His mother's German, Irish, and Cherokee. She gets miffed. And when he gets miffed, he's just like his mom. I open up a capsule and I put it in his juice. He actually loves Powerade. So I mix it with his Powerade or with his juice or with whatever else. And one capsule a day usually reduces his inflammation and his pain in his gums so much that he, little angel, he's a wonderful guy and the world is right and everything's great. With mothers who are breastfeeding, it does come out in the breast milk. There's been no harm that anyone has ever found to the children, and actually the kids who get enzymes in their breast milk never have colic. Pregnant women, and I'm supposed to tell you here, if you're pregnant, ask your doctor. In Central Europe, they have found that spontaneous abortion, miscarriage, is an inflammatory response. There is a really nice study that I published on my website on gals who have avoided recurrent miscarriage by using systemic enzymes. Enzymes will preserve pregnancy. If you combine that with what the Brits have been doing in using the natural progesterone creams to up progesterone levels, especially during first trimester, you've got a double whammy at preserving pregnancy. So anyone you know who has had miscarriages after miscarriage after miscarriage and really, really, really wants to maintain a pregnancy, have them read that research work. And if you want more information on it and you want your OBGYN to talk to another OBGYN, I even gave you the email address of the OBGYN in Munich who did the studies. The stuff works. It works wonderfully. So it is safe to take by anyone. Animals. Lots of pet owners are using this on their dogs, cats, whatever, for hip dysplasia, for all sorts of arthritis. There was a veterinarian, Texas A&M, called me up, said that he wanted to find something to treat heartworm in cats because the medicine that they have for the cat heartworm kills the cat as often as it does the heartworm. Not a good thing. He reasoned out that, well, you know, parasites are exogenous proteins. They're proteins that don't belong in the body. As I mentioned before, it's like having a steak floating around in your bloodstream. So he reasoned that these are exogenous proteins. The enzymes should eat them. So he started feeding this very, very, very sick cat systemic enzymes. And lo and behold, a few weeks later, I don't remember how many weeks, He gives me a ring and says, I just MRI'd this cat. We just scoped it. We did all sorts of things. Not a trace of parasites anywhere. The heartworms are gone. The cat is happy. It's healthy and it's jumping around. Cool. Also from the vets we learn that, you know, we recommend that you take the enzymes away from food half an hour before, an hour after. The label says 45 minutes. You don't have to be quite that much of a stickler. Anytime you've got a fairly empty stomach. But we know from the veterinary work that even if you do have to take it with food, it'll still work. You may lose some of the effects, but you won't lose an awful heck of a lot. And here's one of the only warnings I have about the systemic enzymes. In some folks, and I think it's because of the reason of that yeast die-off that I spoke of before, they'll get a bit of agita, stomach aches, from taking the systemic enzymes. Most of those folks will be okay if they blend it with a light carbohydrate meal. Half a bagel, a bowl of cereal, whatever else. Something without a lot of protein. They just mask it with something. No stomach aches, and they're fine. There is a protocol that I'm going to touch on now. That's the subject of one of my books coming out this year. I'm going to leave you with this little protocol, and then we're going to go into the question and answer period. Dr. Wong's Cornerstones for Anti-Aging. The first thing you have to put back into your bodies to do the anti-aging thing and be like Paul Bragg and not like all the other guys, you have to put in the enzymes. And they have to be strongly fibrinolytic enough to eat away at your scar tissue so that part two of Dr. Wong's Cornerstones will work. If you put in the growth factors and the proto-hormones that the body is missing, that's a whole other subject for a whole other lecture, but I'm just going to touch on this now so that you begin to start thinking about it. If you put in the growth factors and the proto-hormones that your body needs to make the hormones that you have declined in, the IGF-1s, the testosterones, the progesterones, etc., you can regrow your internal organs. They can get back to the size and function they had when you were younger. If on top of that, you do what Dr. Bragg did, which none of the other people that I mentioned did, if you weight train for strength, and I'm going to make a few caveats here, if you weight train for strength, not bodybuilding, but strength training, you will increase your bone mass. You will increase your muscle mass. You will improve your circulation. You will improve your energy by increasing the number of mitochondria that your muscle cells have, which in turn will create more ATP, the blood sugar that you all run off of to run your brain, your eyes, and everything else. Your brain uses 33% of the ATP. Your eyes use 33%. The rest of your body uses the remaining 33%. One of the things with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and mono patients is that they don't have hardly any mitochondria. They don't have this production of ATP. They feel really low. There are supplements that purport to increase the number of mitochondria in cells. The only thing physiologically that works to increase the number of mitochondria in your cells is exercise. You don't do it, you ain't got it. Between the age of 50 and 60, we lose 50%, no, excuse me, I'll get this right, we'll lose an average of 10% muscle mass a year. So that by the time we're 60, we're our bare bones minimum muscle mass to move ourselves around. And if you want to see how bad it gets, walk through any orthopedic rehab ward and watch little old guys and little old gals trying to get up out of bed or stand up off the potty or just plain walk down the hallway with the walkers. Which leads me to the point of why strength training and not bodybuilding, not aerobics, not whatever. Strength training will produce muscle that has hyperplasia. It is split, it has overlapped, you've turned it into plywood, super strong. Bodybuilding produces show muscle that's good for nothing but posing. It is bloated, it is filled with water, and unuseful for any athletic endeavor. Why not aerobic training? Aerobic training, you need your heart, you need this, you need that. When was the last time you ran after the postman because he forgot to pick up a letter? As we get older, the emphasis of the human body is on strength because we lose strength more. If you can't get up off the potty and you can't get out of bed and you can't pick up a skillet from the bottom shelf, what the heck's the use of being able to run 26 miles? So as we age, strength takes precedence over cardiovascular pulmonary capacity. So again, let's put these together. We've got the enzymes. We've got the growth factors and proto-hormones. We've got the progressive resistance exercise with a touch of aerobics. And we can talk about aerobic exercise time later and how enzymes work into that and everything else. Sure, you've got the enzymes. First thing you need. If you don't have the enzymes, the other stuff won't work anywhere near as well. You have to put back the proteolytic enzymes, the systemic enzymes. Then, the growth factors and protohormones. And then finally, the progressive resistance exercise. And if you do all three, you can maintain yourself for a very, very, very long period of time. You will have very lowered rates of inflammation. You will have a good working immune system that's not too high, that's not too low. You will have lowered rates of fibrosis and scar tissue. You will have improved circulation. All you gals with cold hands and feet, a few weeks on the enzymes, they won't be cold anymore. The microcirculation will open up like crazy. Cardiac stent patients, if your stent's beginning to close down because of the fibrotic buildup inside, the enzymes will open it up and clean it out. Do all these things together, and you will have a holistic, with a W instead of an H, you'll have a holistic outlook on your anti-aging program, on your anti-inflammatory program, on your lowering chronic disease condition program. And everything else in life will look a bit peachier. And everything else in life will be a lot easier to do. Folks, thank you very much. God bless you all. And thank you. So, let's start. Yes?
Talk about the relationship of the Vitalzyme and the systemic enzymes and blood pressure medication and how you can go from one to the other in today's society with doctors and everything.
The question is, can I speak to the relationship of systemic enzymes to blood pressure, how they work on blood pressure? Oh, and how they interact with BP medication? Okay. There are two primary causes for high blood pressure. First one is a growing glomerulosclerosis, a growing scarring over of the kidney. The second one is peripheral vascular resistance. Let me explain both. Your kidneys have little filtering fingers on their inner portions. As the fibrosis builds up in your kidneys, it begins to cover over these little fingers. So then instead of having all this filtering area, you've got less. So imagine I'm putting little rubber fingers on my fingers and we're covering up a good bit of it. All of a sudden, I have to preface this by saying that kidneys depend on inflow and outflow. And the inflow and outflow needs to be fairly constant. Because when the inflow and outflow isn't fairly constant, you get kidney damage and death. So, in high blood pressure, what happens is, to maintain the outflow, the body has to boost the inflow. So the blood pressure has to go up to get the same amount of fluid filtered through less of a filtering area. Okay? That's cause number one, high blood pressure. Cause number two, peripheral vascular resistance. We have a gazillion miles of blood vessels in our arms and legs and all throughout everywhere, but especially in the extremities. As we get older, or as we age, and aren't as active as we should be, although this even happens with younger folks, athletes who have a necrosis of the hip and the like, fibrin tends to come in and clog up the little tiny blood vessels that feed the smaller batches of tissue. As more of that fibrin builds up and clogs off those little blood vessels, it's just like you've got the water running in every tap in your house. How's the water pressure? Down pretty low. Close off all the other taps, only leave one. What happens to the water pressure? Goes up. As the blood can't get to every crook and nanny it's supposed to get into, the resistance to... The body wants to get that blood into all those little tissues. Resistance goes up, blood pressure goes up. What the enzymes will do, the enzymes will eat away at the little tiny fibrin plugs that are clogging up your microcirculation. That's easy. Happens in weeks. Gals are always calling up and reporting how their hands are nice and warm, their feet are nice and warm, they're not making their husband's legs cold anymore and stuff. Also, given enough time and given enough enzymes, as I said with Dr. Ronsberger's story before, the enzymes will eat away at the scar tissue that's covering over the filtering fingers in the kidneys and eventually lower blood pressure. So what has to happen with lots of the folks who take the Vitalzyme, who are on blood pressure meds, is that all of a sudden they're like, their blood pressure is down so low they can barely stay awake. So the warning here is, if you feel that happening, if you're on high blood pressure meds, go see your doc, because you need to have the meds modulated. You need to tone the meds down, because the enzymes are opening up your blood vessels, they're eating away at the glomerulosclerosis in the kidneys, and they're naturally lowering your blood pressure. Next question.
Talking about with raw food, that when you are going and buying it one day and eating it the next, almost all the enzymes are gone. Now, where is this balance on we take a handful of enzymes and forget the salad and fruit?
Okay. Oh, no. You still need the food. We can't live on pills. Yeah, who wants to anyway? That was the big spaceman thing from the 1960s. We'd take a pill and here's breakfast. No, it doesn't work. You know, we still need the foods, because the foods have all those nutrients that don't get wasted away. They still have the minerals. Hopefully, if it's in the ground, it's in the fruit, and it's in the vegetables. So we still have the nutrients that we need to get from the food. We just have to replace the enzymes that we're no longer getting from the food. So you can't just take a handful of pills and survive on that. No one can. Yes, ma'am.
I want to ask you if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly in that, for example, I have two stents in a main artery, mm-hmm. and I have to take 81 milligrams of aspirin a day.
Right.
And I also have a lot of allergies and depression and fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue. Medicines do nothing for me. They
right.
just give me side effects I can't handle. So what I'm asking is, are you saying enzymes eliminate the need for the medicines, including the aspirin? And also, you said that the medicines and the vitamins, or I mean the enzymes and the vitamin minerals work with each other.
Right.
Well, what about someone like me who can't tolerate vitamins and minerals? For
okay.
example, magnesium makes me so nauseated, I just can't tolerate it.
Yeah.
And other vitamins and minerals do.
Here we're getting multiple systems, what I call failures or multiple systems hiccups. Let's talk about the aspirin first. If you remember back about a decade ago, when the bright light somewhere told us all to take an aspirin a day, and they didn't qualify how much, they said take one aspirin, one regular old 300 some odd grain aspirin a day. I told you before that on the average 20,000 people die from aspirin. That year it was 40. And the guys really reading the morbidity and mortality reports went, oh, doo-doo. We did something wrong. Okay, everybody, don't take a full aspirin. Take half an aspirin. The next year, it was half an aspirin. Okay, it went down to 30, 35. Still not 20. Then they cut it down to a quarter of an aspirin. It wasn't great science where these guys figured out that it was a quarter of an aspirin a day that did all this wonderful stuff in keeping your platelets from aggregating. It's the fact that they killed about 70,000 people doing whatever it was that they were doing, so until they got to that figure. So long-term taking of aspirin is toxic to the liver and toxic to the kidneys. The enzymes will go in, they will eat away at the fiber, and they will open up the stents and keep them open. All aspirin does is it prevents platelet aggregation. It doesn't do a thing about the fibrin. The enzymes will go in and eat the fibrin, prevent the platelet aggregation. This is if you take enough of them, and we're going to get into dosing here. And will begin to eat away at the fibrosis, causing the pain from the fibromyalgia. Whether that improves your ability to eat the supplements, I don't know. A lot of folks can't take the supplements because they're allergic to all the other stuff that's put in it to build the pill or whatever else. My recommendation here is to play around with some of the liquid supplements and see if they're better tolerated. The liquid mineral supplements, the liquid vitamin supplements, the sublingual B12s and the like. See if you can fortify yourself taking little doses of some of the liquid vitamins and see how your tolerance builds up. But for any fibromyalgia patient, magnesium is then essential, because if you are familiar with the way muscles can contract, there are actin, myosin bands and all the other stuff, these little hands that kind of pull the fibers together and hands that release them. Hands that pull the fibers together. Calcium causes those little hands to get sticky and the fibers get pulled together. Magnesium causes the stickiness to go away and the fibers get pulled apart or stretch out. One of the reasons why folks get cardiac arrhythmia, because they get calcium in their magnesium channels, and instead of a contract-relax signal, they get a contract-contract signal. Okay? Any spasm in a patient with trauma can be relieved by putting in enough magnesium. It's going to give them the runs, but you can relieve the spasm by putting in enough magnesium. Naturopathic docs in the States with naturopathic licensure actually do that intravenously, preventing the runs altogether. Gal comes in with severe menstrual cramps. A guy comes in with a really bad spasming back from a herniated disc injury. They do 2 grams, 2,000 milligrams of intravenous magnesium, and 20 minutes it's gone. Works super for migraines too. But if you can't tolerate all of that, then just play with things. Start taking a minute quantity of the enzymes first. 1 tablet a day for the first week. See how you tolerate it. 2 the next. 3 the following. Try to build yourself up to 3 to 5 twice a day, but do it slowly. Get your body used to it. And then see if you can't wean yourself off of some of the other stuff. If you can find a natural alternative like the lecithin, again, tell you another story. A cousin of mine is hyperlipidemic. She can get cholesterol rates of 4 and 600. And she takes 2 tablespoons of lecithin a day, and within 2 weeks it gets down to 230-something. Works. Lecithin is from soybeans. It is an emulsified fat. It is the good fat that dissolves the bad fat.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that I forgot to tell you is the enzymes themselves. If you take 3 capsules 3 times a day, in 6 weeks, should lower your total cholesterol count by 21%. Just all by their lonesomes. Because the enzymes have within them enough lipase that they actually dissolve a lot of the fat. Okay, next question. Yes.
I know that your enzymes work, and I know people that have used them. But my question is, I got my PhD in nutrition from UC Davis in 1986. And at that time, I was taught that any protein has to be broken down into individual amino acids in order to be absorbed in the intestine. And you're kind of saying something different. And
right.
I have a few other questions.
Okay. The question is on enzyme absorption. It ain't supposed to happen. It's funny that that is still being taught. The work done on enzyme absorption was very definitive, done at Columbia by Dr. Wolf. Dr. Wolf and Dr. Benitez, as far back as 1930-something. So far, there have been 168 studies on old enzyme blends, over 200 studies, all of them peer-reviewed, clinicals and double-blinds, on both absorption and therapeutic action. I put it this way. We have no problem believing that salmonella can be absorbed. Salmonella is 5 times larger than the largest enzymes in terms of Dalton weight. If we can absorb salmonella, we can absorb enzymes. I can't quote the exact studies now, but they are available. If you want to take a look at, oh gosh, where are they? There was a book called Enzymes, the Fountain of Life, by 3 European-trained MDs. It was published by a publishing company in New York, and I have no idea what the name of that company was. Enzymes, the Fountain of Life. One of the doctors, his name was Milkie, M-I-L-K-I-E. I'm probably misspelling it, but close enough. And they cite all the absorption studies that were done here and in Europe. You know, one of the things that actually proves that these enzymes are absorbed is how they're used therapeutically. Systemic enzymes have been used in hospitals in Europe for the last pretty near 40 years, actually longer than that. If you were driving down the Autobahn and you crashed And you manage to survive a fast crash in those tin cans they call cars over there. And they wheeled you into the ER. They would give you, if you were conscious, 60 to 80 systemic enzyme tablets straight up just to keep your brain from swelling and your viscera from swelling. If you were unconscious, they'd make a concoction in about a pint of distilled water worth about 300 enzyme tablets, shoot it up your ear as a retention enema, again to keep your brain from swelling and your internal organs from swelling. If they didn't work and didn't get absorbed, they wouldn't bother. The Germans don't mess with junk. And they've been doing this for over 30 years. The Swiss have a long history of therapeutic use of systemic enzymes. If it didn't work, they wouldn't do it. The Russians stole a good bit of knowledge from the East Germans, and I get into that this afternoon. If it didn't work, they wouldn't use it. They replaced corticosteroid use entirely in Eastern Bloc athletics with systemic enzymes. Threw it all out. Didn't need it. So that when the IOC banned corticosteroids in 1975, the Russians in the comm block went, yeah, so what? And the rest of us went, oh my God, what are we going to do? You know, we didn't have an alternative. They did. And the alternative had been there for 20 years by that time. But yes, the studies are there. They're very definitive. A lot of what affects people here in the States believing those studies is the not done here syndrome. The original work by Dr. Wolf at Columbia, NYU, and Rutgers was done here. The rest of the stuff was done somewhere else.
With the edamame, is that okay to eat, or should you not eat that also?
I'm not familiar with that.
A soybean, just a whole soybean.
Oh, okay. Read Sally Fallon's website. I don't think so, but she'll have more on that than I do.
Do you have a thing of what you recommend for diet? Or do you recommend, like, raw food,
I never recommend diets.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. According to Chinese medicine, diet is so individualized. Dr. Bragg did splendidly on a raw food diet. Most Westerners eating raw food diets would have what Chinese medicine called cold wind. There's no heat in the body. There's no yang force coming in. The yang force comes in with the cooked food. So I have seen folks try to do Dr. Bragg's entire raw food diet, and they basically almost wind up needing IVs with B12, and then we pick them up and take them to Fuddruckers or something. You know, but it is so individualized that I never give diet advice. I will never tell anyone how to lose weight. I will never tell anyone what foods to eat. You follow your heart, what you have a yen for, what you need at that particular moment in time. You may be a ravenous carnivore, and then all of a sudden you want to spend 3 months eating nothing but rabbit food. That's fine. You follow here. You follow your intuition. And this is where guys get all concocted. Intuition will never guide you wrong. Your first impressions are never incorrect. Or rather, you know, your first impressions are never wrong. Intuition will always guide you right. If you're sitting at a corner thinking, I need to turn left. No, but it'll be shorter if I turn right. I need to turn left. No, but I have to turn right. If you turn right, you're going to get hit by a truck. So if you follow your intuition and you follow your heart as to what you need to eat at that particular period of time, you'll be fine. When we try to hammer and nail ourselves into diets that are lifelong, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, people get in trouble doing that. Because your needs at 20 were different from your needs at 35, which are different from your needs at 40, which are different from your needs at 60. Your gastrointestinal tract, the enzymes, how you're processing food, the amount of vitamins you're taking in or not taking in, all different. Environmental stresses, all different, which dictate what you need at any given time. Is that a close enough answer?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. That was really good. Can I ask you another question?
Sure. One more.
Okay, one more. In school, I mean, they never taught us that our enzymes, like, started to really decrease after 27.
Yeah.
And then we have none when we're older.
Right.
Always you had enzymes and they were fine.
Right. Where are they supposed to come from? You know, and that's what I ask a lot. We naturally make pancreatin, trypsin, and chymotrypsin. And that creates a cascade to start other things. When we take in bromelain and papain and the other enzymes, the serapeptase or the, you know, whatever, it adds to the enzymic cascade. Dr. Wolf found definitive research. It is in a book called Enzyme Therapie, published in 1973. It's German, if you couldn't tell. his work at Columbia showed that around about 2735, there are some differences with race, there are some differences with Northern European, Southern European versus African or Asian, but somewhere between 27 and 35, enzyme levels, enzyme output decreases substantially. It's about the same time that lots of folks begin to get slightly swollen pancreases, or the pancreas doesn't work, you don't digest food that well anymore, lots of different things begin to kick in, and no, it isn't generally taught.
Pancreas, or is this enzymes all over the body?
The pancreatic enzymes create the trypsin, chymotrypsin, and pancreatin, the pancreatic enzymes and the small bowel.
But they're just secreted into the intestines, they're not absorbed into the stomach.
Yeah, no, they're secreted into the intestines and then reabsorbed through the intestinal wall and into the bloodstream, and the studies on that have also been done and shown. Right, they proved that with radioactive markers. Eww, I'd hate to be in that study. Standing in front of a fluoroscope watching all this stuff just course around your body. Eww, nasty.
This concludes Dr. William Wong's lecture, Revitalize with Vitalzyme.